Hey Zwifters, I'm Simon Schofield, and this is the Zwiftcast. Coming up on this episode, could Zwift really get to a billion users? Tax Flux, the latest on the troubled trainer, and tips on weight loss from a pro rider coach. So, welcome to the first podcast of 2017 and a happy new year to my partners in Zwift Chat. Nathan Guerra, yo dude.
Hey, how's it going, Simon?
Not bad, thank you. And Shane Miller, g'day, mate.
G'day, Simon, how are you?
I'm very well. Nathan, you've got a bit of a frog in the throat, old bean. You sound a little bit under the weather.
Old bean, yeah, just a little bit. Winter caught up with me just a little bit here, but on the better end of it, actually, you might be a little surprised hearing the voice. So Voice of Zwift will be up and running tomorrow again, though, with some race casting. So we're on the mend.
Well done. Well done. That's what I like to hear. Shane, I gather you're mopping the sweat from your brow.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm here in Ballarat this week for the Australian National Road Championships. The weather is hot. The racing is hot. And midsummer, we're loving it. So we've got the absolute opposite to Nathan. And there's some great racing being happening.
Excellent stuff. Well, listen, let's get on, because as usual, there's an awful lot to talk about. And quite a lot of that has come from what seems to be an increased presence all over the platform from senior Zwift bods, seeing an awful lot of Eric Min in chat on Facebook. The guys have been all over text. And as a result of that, we've had all kinds of little info bombs dropped recently. The game's creator, John Mayfield, dropped another one, a right little gem. Steve Beckett let go a very interesting piece of information. So what I think we ought to do is just start by rattling through those. Let's start with a little thing that Eric said, which was that December the 31st was the biggest ever day for new Zwifters signing up. January was always going to be huge, but it sounds like it's been perhaps even huger. Nathan, do you think this influx will convert to regular users, or is this just people thinking, oh my God, it's January, I ate too much over Christmas, I better do something?
Well, I think there's a lot of what you just mentioned, you know, people wanting to get back in shape. But I think there's also an introduction that's going to happen to maybe a new way of cycling and not just a training tool. Zwift actually let me know that over the summer they grew. And I'm assuming when they said grew instead of decreased, they actually increased. I'm assuming that meant memberships. And what types of users those will be is going to have a direct impact. I have a feeling rather than just training tool, we might see people start seeing a new way of cycling and as an indoor life. In the same way that you have these life centers and gyms and things that have already transformed for a long time now, the way that you go about running and weight training or whatever it might be, and there's an expectation of some indoor expression of that. And adding the social aspect then on top of it, even, and digital communities and pre, during, and post user experience being a whole new world, I have a feeling there might be some staying power around that is really unexpected, actually.
Yeah, well, growth is a bit of a theme, actually, of the first section of this podcast. I'm going to talk about that with our extremely interesting first interviewee in a few moments. But Shane, I mean, obviously, you know, we live quite clearly in a global world. And as we just discussed, you know, midwinter here, midsummer there. But do you get the impression that Zwift is remaining popular in Australia? I mean, I get the idea that people actually do it to escape the heat.
Yeah, for sure. Look, over summer, what I've seen here with the groups I'm involved with and sort of what I observe on Zwift, people, the numbers are still strong and people are still jumping on because it's part of their routine. It's the bunch ride they join and it's the group they do, or it's the workout platform that they use. So Nathan nailed it. It's become part of their cycling now.
Okay, well, growth of Zwift, got to be a good thing. Now, something that took me by surprise, and I'd be really interested to hear what you think about this, Shane, was, again, another kind of like unscheduled intervention from John Mayfield, who announced out of the blue that Ant Plus was going to be supported on iOS after all. I was surprised about that, because the direction of travel for the iOS platform looked to be firmly Bluetooth. Shane, it was done over the holidays as well. Do you think this was a kind of, oh my God, we've got to do this, we've realised we've made a mistake in not doing it, or what? It was weird, I thought.
Yeah, look, it's a strange one for us content creators, because it was always pushed that Zwift iOS was always Bluetooth, just Bluetooth, no, the dongle will not work. And we just continue to push that message because that's the way it was. And along come this message that sort of invalidates what we've been saying. So a lot of people who were trying to put two and two together and say, oh no, you can get the ant stick and it works, and put the ant stick together when that was incorrect, that now becomes correct. So there's going to be a little bit of confusion there. The issue is that the only dongle that I think works is the Wahoo dongle, which is a 30-pin dongle, which you have to get a converter for to make it lightning. And then there's the issue of you can't charge the device while that dongle's plugged in. I'm still unsure about this. It feels that it was, I mean, it's great that the product can have this added to it, but it feels very homebrew, that it's just sort of added in, and which causes even a little bit more confusion. It would have been nice to stick to one or the other, or just go straight down the one freeway of let's go Bluetooth.
But it looked unplanned, which is unusual for Zwift, very unusual.
Yeah, that's why I refer to the term homebrew. It just looks a little bit sort of not part of a timeline. I mean, it's great that John added this in, and I'm all for it. I'll test it. I'll, it gives us another option. But the dongles are actually quite expensive. I think they're around $79 US. So that's almost the cost of, you know, switching over to Bluetooth devices. I'm still unsure.
Me too. It was a weird one. Anyway, moving on. Another little info bomb. This one came from marketing man Steve Beckett, and I was on a group ride with him. And his presence was pointed out by the group ride leader, and obviously he kind of got bombarded by questions. But one answer he did give, which was really interesting, and I've not seen this leak out on the groups, actually. I think it was just known to the people on the group ride. So here we go, Steve. A wider audience for this little idea, which is that Zwift are definitely going to open a virtual bike shop where you're going to be able to spend XP points. Now, Nathan, this has been a long time coming, but completely logical. But what kinds of things do you think we're going to be able to buy with our XP points?
Well, okay, well, first I want to address one thing is that seems odd to me. Is that there's experience in games and then there's currency in games. And experience is something that you gain over time that you usually are unable to lose, because it's a representation of the time you spent and the work you've put in the game. And so it directly correlates with your level in the game. And then there's currency, which is usually an enhancer of motivations for riding or interactions in the game that is objective based. You do some sort of objectives. It might be reaching level 25, it might be reaching level whatever it might be that's correlated with your experience. And then you have a currency that you can spend and you can do things with it. You can lose it, you can gain it, and it goes away. But so that's interesting that they would use the word experience. I wonder if they actually meant a currency, because I think that adding a currency and objectives would actually also enhance user experience and replay value of the game, actually.
Yeah, and we have to recognize that Steve was talking on Zwift text here, which, you know, it's not the...
Well, I have heard this elsewhere, though, not just in, like, I've heard rumors of this as well, and so I'm wondering how that's going to play out, because there is a large sum that I have right now of experience that's up and over the top of 25 that I'm wondering what they're going to do with that, because I've been waiting for more levels for a while. So that's interesting. I wonder what direction they'll take with currency or experience. But as far as what to be able to buy, that's going to be awesome. I mean, we've seen the number one game of 2017, Overwatch, rated number one game, has done an amazing job just on skins, holiday themes, accessories, you know, things that are just cosmetics, right? And so I could see a situation where, you know, obviously kits, bike cosmetics, parts, bling out your bike like you would at your local shop. You know, it'd be awesome to have theme packs that are based around trade teams, teams or Giro d'Italia, Tour de France, or different events from around the world that are all a major part of the cycling world that you could identify with, your favorite race, whatever it might be, they could create all these theme packs. It's a great idea, and we've seen huge success in the gaming world with it, actually. And so I'm super excited about it. Huge, huge value.
I've noticed the indoor trainer they use is a kicker snap on the start line there. I'm just hoping I can upgrade to a proper kicker, or maybe even a virtual Neo on the start line.
That's just pure. That is pure trainer snobbery, Shane Miller. You ought to be ashamed. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. The other little thing that came out, although interestingly, and you don't see this very often, this thread got deleted. But within that thread, there was a suggestion, kind of endorsed by Eric. Certainly, Eric said something like, "We're taking a fresh look at this," of the idea that all three courses could be integrated, meaning presumably you could flip seamlessly from London, ride a bit in Richmond, and then go and do the KOM in Watopia or something very similar. Shane, I mean, the reason frequently given for this not being able to happen was an absence, not an absence, but not quite enough riders on Zwift to justify it, and people would get lonely. I mean, we have seen, I think we hit 3,000, certainly 2,800, 2,900 has been fairly common this week. Do you think we've got enough players now?
Yeah, for sure. I do indeed. I'm a Watopia fan, so if I can select that all the time, for sure. I was riding along the other day with about 1,300 to 1,400 people on, and the start line, pretty much where everyone spawns at the start of the game, that was really, really busy. So out the road and up the hills, there might be a few less numbers out there. But in the start line, there was quite a number of people. I'm like, yeah, you know what? It may be time for us to, I guess, buy one of the portal guns and shoot a hole in the wall, and away we go to Richmond or to London and come back.
Nathan, flipping from world to world in gaming is very common, isn't it? Do you think it's going to come to Zwift soon?
Shane just nailed it on the head that, you know, diluting the social experience up front, you know, because there wasn't a lot of people, but now we might be diluting the social experience by having too many people. You want to make social great, and you got the people that you want to interact with, and then all of a sudden this guy or gal's in your way who's not a part of your race or your event, and or Z Power Ranger dude is pulling the whole group up in a break who's not a part of the race. And so, and the social is amazing, but then there's also a side that it can create friction with if we don't correctly set up the expectations, you know, the game set up the expectations correctly as people enter into it, you know. And so I think creating spaces and making them well defined in the rapidly growing world, and so that they're clearly meant for the users, is going to be really important. We can't get too crowded, and at the same time, people want to interact different ways and take different seriousness to either competitive or just hanging out with the buddies side of things. And I think spaces probably should be made for that. And I think that there's a lot of different ways that they could do it. I think it could go, or even, I don't know, I'd like to see it go beyond just being able to go to Watopia, Richmond, or London, but actually even different instances of each course and having a little more ability to choose. That might be further down the line, though, than what we're immediately going to see.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm beginning to think there might be a need now, a real need for a race-only course. I mean, there was a guy who was obviously a newbie, who I felt kind of sorry for him, really, who got overwhelmed by some gigantic peloton, I think, that was in a race. You know, there was like 200 riders. And on text, he said, I don't know if iTunes allow me to say this, but on text, he said, WTF. And it was, you know, it was like obvious that this poor guy it was probably quite new on Zwift and was just not used to these enormous swooping packs of riders coming and kind of completely overwhelming him. It was quite a funny moment, actually. But it did make me think that things have been getting a bit crowded, and certainly a race-only course, I think, will be a cool thing. Anyway, the kind of numbers of potential Zwifters was a very interesting subject that cropped up in my next interview. This is with one of the guys who invested in the recent fundraising round, which put an awful lot of cash at Zwift's disposal, as we know. So let's hear a few minutes of very interesting chat with a guy called Ed Baker.
Hi,
most people who follow what Zwift, the company, is doing know that just recently they raised something over $27 million to invest in the game. So who are the people who put their money into Zwift? The company's CEO, Eric Min, gave us a few clues during his long interview with the podcast in November.
We have strategic investors and we have high net worth individuals. I can tell you that every one of these investors are Zwifters.
So let's meet one of these people. Ed Baker is 37 years old. He lives in Palo Alto in California and works in San Francisco for Uber. It's actually great to be able to put a voice to one of these people because investors are often kind of hidden away, aren't they, Ed? First of all, welcome.
Thank you, Simon. It's great to be here.
Why don't we start by talking about your sporting interests? How long have you been cycling? And I think I'm right in saying you came to it from running at a pretty good level?
I've only been cycling for the past 3.5 years. Running, I've been a competitive runner throughout school. I ran cross country and track at Harvard. I then continued to run after college, and I actually ran in the Olympic trials for the marathon in 2007 for the U.S. Olympic trials. And my best time for the marathon was 2:21.
Ed cut back on running a bit as his career grew more demanding, and when he became a father, he's now got 3 kids. He took up Tri, which of course got him on a bike, and of course got him onto Strava, and that's when he found Zwift.
I noticed that Mark Zuckerberg, who I'm connected with on Strava, started posting rides he had done on Zwift, and I had actually never heard of Zwift before, and it caught my attention seeing that in my Strava feed. And so I reached out to Mark and I said, what is this thing? And he told me about it and basically confirmed that he actually was biking on a stationary bike or on a trainer. And it was a good workout and it was a fun way to work out. And so he recommended it. And then I asked him, well, you know, what kind of trainer should I get? And he said he recommended the Kicker.
Now, it's not every day you get a trainer recommendation from the boss of Facebook, but Ed and Mark Zuckerberg are former colleagues.
At Facebook, I was running our international growth team, which meant I was basically helping Facebook accelerate growth in international markets. And then about 3.5 years ago, I came over to Uber to start up our growth team here. The way we think about growth here at Uber, it's all about we not only need to grow our rider base, but also our driver base, since it's a two-sided marketplace. My team is working on ways to accelerate both rider growth and driver growth.
That word growth, did you catch it? It was hard to miss. Ed Baker has a lot of experience in growing digital businesses. Let's go back to what Eric said about his investors back in November.
So, you know, they see what we're doing. They think that we have the opportunity to really grow this business and go after a much bigger market than I think the rest of, than other people might think.
A much bigger market than people might think. Now, hold that thought a second or two. Ed Baker met Eric and they decided that Ed would invest in Zwift, bringing with him his expertise in growth. What do you believe, Ed, that the potential of Zwift is? I mean, how big a business do you think this could become? You've been involved with, well, you know, Facebook is one of the biggest businesses in the world. I'm not sure anybody's suggesting Zwift could be that big, but how big do you think it could be?
I think this can be as big as, you know, anyone in the world who wants to stay in shape should give the product a try. And that's a lot of people. I think it could be someday a billion plus people. One thing I love about it is, you know, having been an athlete my whole life, mostly a runner, I've always found that when I run with other people, I can get in a better workout and it's, you know, less painful than if I'm doing it myself. And to have, you know, to be able to hop on Zwift at any time of day and ride alongside other people, I find I can get in a better workout than if I just go on a ride by myself and have more fun doing it. And so I think there are a lot of people in the world who I think could benefit from that. the, you know, potential is still pretty huge.
So social engagements could be so transformative for the indoor fitness business that eventually one in every seven people on planet Earth could try Zwift over time. It's a big number, but it's not just anybody saying it. And I think it might just provoke a bit of discussion. But what, I wondered, does a private investor in a company like Zwift actually do?
A big part of what I think about when I think about growth is how do you remove friction in the sign-up process and the onboarding process for first-time users. So much of it is about if you can remove that friction and just make it easier to sign up and use it for the first time, more people will use it. It's not rocket science. It's actually kind of common sense. But with Zwift, what I found is there's actually quite a bit of friction to using Zwift for the first time. I mean, I had to post on Facebook and ask my friends, which trainer should I get? I had to get the trainer. I had to hook that up. I had to download the software. I had to make sure everything worked together. And it was something I was willing to do, and I know everyone in the Zwift community has done, largely because we are so passionate about using this product. But it takes a lot of work. It's a lot harder than just signing up for Facebook or signing up and using Uber for the first time. So one piece of advice I gave the team was we should do anything we can to remove that friction. If we can make it easier for first-time users to try using the product, we should do that. If you can do it without having to buy an expensive trainer, that also opens it up to a lot more people. So I think that anything we can do to basically allow more people to give it a try without having to make large upfront investments in hardware is something that's just going to allow more people to give it a try.
Is $10 a month too cheap?
Good question. What I can say is I personally find more value out of Zwift than $10 a month. But I also think, and this is something I've learned at Uber as well, is when you lower prices, you get more people to use the product. And so I don't know what the right price point is. I haven't been involved in those discussions as an advisor. What I can say is I personally would be willing to pay more than $10 a month, but I don't think that's a reason to raise the price. I think the lower the price, the more people will use it. And I think another way to lower prices is back to something we were talking about earlier, which is if you can use Zwift without having to pay for expensive hardware, then that effectively is another way of lowering the price for new users.
Again, I think this is an interesting question given your background. Do you think the pace of development of the platform is kind of about right? Where do you think they're sitting in terms of the correctness of how quickly they're developing the product?
Pretty much every company I've worked at, we always feel like we wish we could go even faster. And I think that's a good sign when you can't keep up with the pace that your community wants you to, ship product at. So I've been impressed with how much Zwift has accomplished over, the period of time I've been a user of Zwift. But I think anything we can do to accelerate that will make things even better. So I think we can always, I think picking up the pace is always a good thing. A lot of times it just comes down to how to prioritize things when you only have a limited number of people who are working on developing new features. There are always more features to develop than you have people to develop them. So sometimes you've got to make hard trade-offs. But hopefully we'll see the pace continue to accelerate as the team grows.
Yeah. And I've got to ask you this question because you raised his name. I was going to, but it's really great that you raised it first because it makes it slightly less awkward for me to raise it. But if Mark Zuckerberg called up Eric Min tomorrow and offered like gazillions of dollars for the platform and wanted to buy it and own it. How would you advise the leadership team?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I would only share my own experiences with Mark and how I feel about Facebook. And of course, the decision would be left entirely to Eric and his team. But one thing I could say is I've seen when Mark has acquired companies in the past, he lets those companies run pretty much independently. If you look at companies like Instagram or WhatsApp or Oculus, even though those companies have been acquired by Facebook, they pretty much still run as independent companies. And so, you know, gazillions of dollars is a lot of dollars. but I think there are pros and cons. So I think as long as Zwift could continue to run as kind of an independent company and continue to have like the same community to it, then I think I think it could be a good thing. But I know there are no discussions like that going on at this time.
Thank you very, very much indeed for making so much time to talk and answering the questions very honestly and openly. And it's great to meet one of the people who is injecting cash into Zwift to help it grow. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Simon. It was great talking with you.
Well, boys, there are a couple of like really interesting things in there, but the standout one, of course, is that 1 billion number. I mean, 1 billion, really? Shane, do you think he means a billion literally, or do you think he's just trying to convey the potential scale of Zwift by kind of citing a random, very big number?
Yeah, the term we say here in Australia is, yeah, turn it up. It's a billion? Nah, not going to happen. I can see the potential. This is the thing that got me hooked on Zwift way back, was the potential of the platform. And I have seen it develop to where I believed it was going to go and beyond, which is really good. So I think these guys, if they've built platforms before, and similarly, they've built the social environment that Zwift really relies on for growth and scale. So I think it's going to be very, very big. Billion? Probably not so much. There's other things in the world that I think companies need to be focusing on, like clean water and health first, then getting a billion people on. But it'll be big. I'll say that.
Yeah. Nathan, I think a billion just means very, 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 very big and much bigger than anybody thought, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I mean, I'm a hard numbers guy on like reality of... So let's say we get this into every gym in every modern country. How many people could we actually get on the, you know what I mean? Like if there is some sort of way that everybody could have it in their own living room, you know, and it is the main thing. There really isn't any other competition out there that I see doing something similar as far as social goes and really having the kind of investment that we see right now. You know, that's a huge number. We're talking, just the population of the US and the UK, it doesn't even come close. You know what I mean? And they are worldwide, though. I mean, it's a little big. It's a little big. At the same time, the scaling out that could happen, I'm not going to like come down on it with a hammer and be like, no way whatsoever. Because I think that there is some scaling out that could take place with being able to be much more viable to a lot more people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the kind of potential scale that he was perhaps attempting to convey with this number was well, one, over time. So let's think of like a 10-year time window. And two, this could be tried, not used regularly, but tried by absolutely everyone who has any interest whatsoever in any kind of online exercise game. And when you start to look at those two factors, then, you know, actually, it's still a ridiculously large number, one seventh of the Earth's population. But you know, this guy is clearly no fool. And I think it's perhaps a kind of cipher for it could be so, so, so much bigger than anybody has yet even begun to conceive. interesting, really interesting. The other big theme I picked up from the interview, and he mentioned it, three, maybe four times, was removing the barrier of having to invest in expensive hardware. Now, I thought about this a lot after the interview, and I listened to it back three or four times, and I still don't quite get it. I mean, I know there's this whole smart bikes thing, but Nathan, how could you do Zwift without a trainer? Or does he just mean it needs to work with loads of really cheap trainers?
Well, I think we're stuck on this idea of in our house. I think that making it as accessible to anyone to try anywhere, I'm thinking, you know, I've seen programs, lots of programs already very, very simple at the local YMCA on some sort of trainer bike right there, right? And so that's accessible immediately to anybody who's just got a gym membership and is already there and like, well, I'm going to jump on Zwift at the gym, you know? And so I think that what you're talking about with smart bikes or some sort of ready-made where these things are available at places that already do some sort of exercise maybe could do that. The only thing I can think of is gyms. That's the only thing that comes to my mind that would do that kind of thing.
A couple of other interesting points that came out of that. Mark Zuckerberg rides a kicker. Well, who knew? I mean,
problem solved. Kicker on Neo. Zuckerberg has said it. It is the kicker. There we go.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I mean, you know, what is this, Nathan? Is this a valuable endorsement? I mean, are they going to be, you know, doing a jig in the aisles in Atlanta, or is this, oh my God, it has suddenly become the most uncool trainer you could possibly imagine?
No, it's valuable. I think it's valuable. I think it justifies every single kicker post in Zwift Riders that has ever happened, maybe for them, because that's the place on Facebook where the term from, like, well, it's just a kicker. It's always a kicker. Kicker, kicker is obviously, yeah, is obvious to everything. It was the new Ohio for so long, you know, and now that Zuckerberg himself, the creator of Facebook, has said kicker, it almost is like this exclamation mark on all the Facebook kicker posts we've seen forever. So
the trainer that Mark Zuckerberg rides.
I love it.
I think we ought to leave that conversation.
And the branding's perfect too. It's blue and black. I mean, I don't know. It matches.
Ride on.
Well as Mark Zuckerberg, we're seeing an increasing number of big names on Zwift, and many of those big names are, of course, pro riders or ex-pro riders. So with thanks to everybody on Facebook who helped compile this, here's a just-for-fun, non-exhaustive list of all the pro riders we think are on Zwift. Evelyn Stevens, Edvald Bosenhagen, Jens Watt, Matty Hayman, Steve Cummins, Christine Armstrong-Savola, Lawson Craddock, Tiffany Cromwell, Fumi Yukubepu, Michael Matthews, Simon Yates, Alex Dowsett, Peter Cetina, Russ Downing, Dean Downing, Andre Greipel, Warren Barguil, Leah Thorvaldsen, Thomas DeGent, Axel Merckx, Taylor Finney, Hannah Barnes, Danny King, Adam Yates, Jamie Brakovich, Michael Kwiatkowski, Lawrence Tindam, Lisa Brunau, Ted King, Graham Miller, Wes Mann, Raphael Micah, Jody Cundy, Adrian Timmis, Andrea Schillinger, Barry Bonds, Tom Dumoulin, Ian Bibby, Maurizio Fondries, Scotty Weiss, Mike McCarthy, Robert Hasing.
Right on!
Nathan, I'm really sorry. I realised immediately after I recorded that one big name was missing. Yours. So I'm terribly sorry about that. But it did prompt a thought that, you know, there's so many pros on Zwift now. Is it only a matter of time until we see a pro rider race on Zwift?
Well, there's been talks about this for longer, since beta, I think, actually, from not just inside Zwift, but also other people wanting to use Zwift for certain, you know, promotional aspects of events. I think that most of these ideas would have to be on site somewhere and in conjunction with a network in some sort of way to make it as verifiable as possible, maybe. But I mean, at the same time, if the spirit of it was for fun more than serious competition, then it could be either or, you know. So but yeah, there's I think it's not just a could, I think when. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay, well, regular listeners will know I went to Italy to see the HQ of trainer company Elite, and while I was there, I spent some time in their R&D, research development department. If we accept, and if you're listening to this, you probably do, that Zwift has permanently changed indoor cycling, then you'll probably agree that that revolution is unlikely to grind to a shuddering halt. One consequence of that is that trainer companies must innovate, and to do that, they need a thriving research and development arm. Elite has one, of course. And sales guy Peter Largo took me in.
So we've moved into the research and development department here, which again is a lovely room, lots of bike parts around, lots of computers with big screens and people looking in detail at all kinds of tiny aspects of each particular trainer.
And when I asked the obvious question, I got the predictable answer.
What are these guys working on at the moment?
New products.
But what are those going to be? Zwift CEO Eric Min set the cat amongst the trainer company pigeons a bit with what he said on the Zwiftcast a few weeks ago.
Then you will see over the next 2 years an introduction of what we're calling the smart bikes. And and these smart bikes are sort of the next generation stationary bikes, which will work out of the box with Zwift. So we're very, very excited about this new product. It's a concept at the moment.
But whose concept? Was Eric just flying a kite? Or are the trainer companies quietly working on a smart bike? I asked Elite company boss Giulio Bertolo.
That is something that we are talking between us, and we are see what is the right way to go.
If Signor Bertolo sounded like he was choosing his words carefully, that's because he was. It's clear Eric's smart bike talk has not gone unnoticed. But the idea of a smart bike is not brand new.
Smart bike is something that we studied some years ago, and unfortunately was too early, because maybe there was a bike, but there was not other content around the bike.
The content that was missing before now exists in the form of Zwift. And Eric Min, for one, sounds certain the game is going to continue to spur on products innovation.
There's a big initiative by the industry, and no one's said a peep about it yet.
Whether Elite is involved, they aren't saying. Peter Largo may or may not be handing out clues.
The next couple of years, I think there's a couple of things coming out on board. We're also working on something.
But there's no doubt that if you're a consumer interested in indoor training, then a lot of development work is going on your behalf. And with product cycles getting shorter and shorter, more and more choice is going to be presented to you.
The lifespan of a product, even nowadays on trainers, is getting shorter and shorter. That's driven by competition. That's driven by demand, customer needs. So if you asked me this question 5 years ago, I would have said with a trainer, you would have at least 3-4 years of life out of this product. Nowadays, it's probably half that. So we are clearly working on already new solutions for next year for 2018, because we're seeing this almost race towards the best training tool.
The biggest beneficiaries of this race are you and me. Not only has the indoor cyclist got the biggest choice of trainer ever available, but the competition is driving down prices.
I think that one thing there will be more product like interactive trainer next year, and with more brands, and with a lower price too. The challenge is the quality of a product. So the right balance between performance of a product and price.
Okay. Well, it's a lovely environment in here. It's a lovely sunny office, hardwood floors, lots of guys looking as though they're very intent on getting every single detail right. And as you'd expect, a kind of quiet, concentrated environment in the R&D department. And I can't see anything on the screen that's going to get us all incredibly excited. But you perhaps wouldn't have expected that.
Well, we've already touched on this, guys, really, and it's interesting that, again, that intersection of Zwift and smart bikes came up in the discussions I had both on and off microphone with the boss of Elite. I mean, he seemed to me to be genuinely undecided about whether to go down this road. I think all the trainer companies have been slightly rattled by Eric making repeated references to smart bikes, and a smart bike's coming, and there's something coming that nobody knows about, and, you know, somebody's working on it. I don't know, Shane. Who do you think it is? What, I mean, who are the kind of strongest suspects, you would have thought?
That's all I've got to say on that. Look, I'm keen to see where the technology goes. There hasn't been a lot of good progress, I guess you'd call it, in the smart trainer space. I want to see these guys making magic behind the scenes. I don't want to see what's behind the curtain. I want them to come out with this new magic box where we pull out something that's fantastic and gives us some inertia and some downhill and uphill and corners and steering and you name it, the next gen stuff. That's what I want to hear from these guys. And if you didn't see that behind the scenes, I'm a bit worried.
But you know, they never show you, do they? They don't. And I've heard a couple of rumours as well, which I can't repeat here because I just don't know if they're true, to be honest. But they were, shall we say, interesting and surprising. Just finally on this, Elite seemed to recognise, Nathan, that prices were only really heading in one direction, and that was down mainly as a result of more people coming into the space to build smart trainers as this market grows and grows and grows. I guess that's, you know, that can only be a good thing for consumers.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely great. And that's the whole idea of reducing the friction that he was talking about. And so less friction to get involved in the game, get involved in Zwift is going to bring more and more and more people in the game. You know, for him over at Uber, it's download an app, push a button, and your car shows up. And they need to make it as close to seamless like that as they possibly can as far as getting on it, on the program. And so the hardware that's needed, obviously, having prices come down is going to be huge. It's kind of like, what needs to come first, though? We drive our prices down. Is it going to grow enough? Kind of a thing. So I think they're playing the knife's edge a little bit right now.
My take on it is that trainer prices are definitely heading down. I mean, one trainer which is directly contributing to this downward pressure on prices is the Tax Flux. It's the direct drive trainer that undercuts all the others on price. But as we've discussed on the last couple of podcasts, it's not had the easiest of births. It is, however, an incredibly important product for the whole market, and in particular for Tax. Now, I got my test unit just before Christmas and thought it only right that I try to do a Shane and see how well the trainer would stand up to a bit of pounding. So here's my review of it. So it's Flux unboxing time. Inside the box, we have a couple of Tax films, Training with Radio Shack, and an Ironman triathlon route. Little pack of instructions, power cable, bag of bits, including a quick release skewer. Piece of polystyrene off the top, and then you just pull the trainer out of the box. So that's all pretty simple. There's only two parts. Pair of legs or a stand and the trainer itself. Whoa, which is pretty heavy. And I wonder if people are going to be using this card a lot. It's a Tax customer support card. Need support for your Tax product, it says. Let's hope we don't need too much of that. Building the trainer is stupidly easy. You clip the V-shaped section into the frame and do it up with the supplied bolts and Allen key, and that is that. Apart, of course, from fitting the cassette, because Tax do not provide a cassette, which is a bit annoying, to be honest. For the price of a relatively low-end cassette, I don't know why trainer companies don't provide cassettes. I know everybody's got different needs, but really,
a Shimano or a Campag cassette is not going to cost them a lot of money. And that's it. That's the Flux built. It took, well, it took me a couple of minutes, actually, because I messed around. But under a minute, I would imagine. It's two bolts. Really simple. It's a nice-looking thing. I've got it next to the Neo at the moment, and you can see it owes a lot of its styling to the Neo. It's got an exposed kind of silvery disc on one side. It looks very nice. Looks very, very attractive. So we'll get a cassette on it and take it for a spin. Well, there was one further job that needed to be done before I could jump on the trainer, and that was to update the firmware. I did that through the Tax Utility, and it was all extremely straightforward. There were two parts to it. The first part was incredibly fast, and the second part was a little bit slower, but it all happened as it should have happened without any undue grief. These are my impressions after the first ride. It's a very quiet trainer, and I'll play some noise comparisons between the Flux and the Neo shortly. It's also very smooth, and if I was judging it directly against the Neo on the smoothness of the feel, I'd honestly say you'd be hard put to tell the difference. There was a small, and I mean really small, sensation of roughness or very mild grinding under heavy load, but it was transitory, and I've noticed something not dissimilar on the Neo, so for me, not really something to worry about. Transitions through the gradients on Zwift happened where you'd expect them to, and as others have noted, there is a short power lag, but in the ride I did yesterday, which was a group ride with drills, the lags were of no concern. That might be different in a race situation. The Flux responded well in all other situations, from easy cruising at 2 watts per kilogram, through sprinting, to stomping on the pedals at low cadence to bring the power up from 2 watts per kilo to 6 or 7. Now, I was nervous and alert for the smell of hot rubber, given the problems that some, and I stress some, early users have reported. But at the end of the ride, which lasted well over an hour, all seemed well. Let's see how it performs next time. But before we hear about the results of another ride, let's do some sound testing. I set up the recording equipment in exactly the same place, in exactly the same room, on exactly the same bike. The only variation, of course, was the trainers. I tested each trainer at a specific wattage. I ran them at 175, 240, 290 and 350 watts. This is the Tax Flux at 175. And this is the Neo at 175. Back to back. The Tax Flux at 240. And now the Neo at the same wattage. Side by side. Moving up a bit, this is the Flux at 290 watts. And its big brother, the Neo, also at 290 watts. Back to back. Finally, the Flux at 350 watts. And the Neo doing the same wattage, 350. And one last time. So what does that tell us? Well, you can judge for yourselves, but the Neo is obviously the quieter trainer. It's got a sort of reassuring drone, whereas the Flux is a bit clankier and a bit noisier overall. But these are small differences, and we are talking about the Neo, the quietest trainer on the market, and significantly more expensive than the Flux. The cheaper trainer is not intrusive, and it certainly won't bother Zwifters with fans on and a few tunes pumping out. I don't think it will bother other members of the household either. With the door shut, it's more or less silent in the rest of the house. Let's have another ride. This might be a sterner test. Okay, well, here's the breathless bit of the review. I know you look forward to that bit. Not too breathless, actually. I've just stepped off the trainer after an hour-long group ride with a couple of observations. Again, as others have said, going downhill on the Flux, you kind of need your wits about you, really. It's easier to get dropped going downhill than other trainers I've ridden. I've not been so worried about getting dropped downhill since I last rode a Kicker, actually. So you don't automatically get dropped, but you do need your wits about you, and you do need to pedal hard. The other observation I'd make, I mean, I've just done a group ride. I was in the front group of a pretty briskly paced ride for the hour. My watts per kilogram was 3.4, so that would be kind of the very top end of C, back end of B in the Racing Cats. I felt that was a bit generous. I mean, I had a 20-minute best power of 2.92, which is only 3 watts under my FTP. And going on feel, I think the Flux was giving me 10 watts, maybe even 15 watts. It felt, I don't feel I've done a ride that was a 20-minute best of only 3 watts under FTP. I mean, it was brisk, it was stiff, it was a fairly tough ride, but on my going on feel alone, no maths involved, no directly comparing two different kinds of power meter, I felt it was a fraction generous, but only a fraction. But it's continued to perform very well. I'm enjoying riding it. No bad smells coming from it. No bad noises coming from it. It's a really solid trainer. Well, I managed to get another couple of rides in on the Flux, and there was nothing major to report. No incidents, no burning rubber smell. It was a nice trainer to ride. It's not as nice as the Neo in several respects, but the Neo is a good deal more expensive, and the differences could be summed up, to coin a phrase, as kind of marginal gains. The Neo is a nicer trainer to ride, but, you know, is it that much nicer to justify the much higher price tag? Well, people who buy it will be the ones who make that decision best. So given the difficulties and the problems that some early adopters of this new trainer have had, you can't, or I can't, make a completely definitive decision as to whether you should buy it or not. It needs some more riding for me to be able to reach that conclusion. So I am going to continue to ride it. I'm going to ride a couple of races on it, and I will report back, because I've got a feeling that the Tax Flux story is one that we are going to be returning to on the podcast.
Ride on!
Well, Shane, I failed to do what you did, and in some cases, quite the kind of contrary view to yours. Well, no, actually, that's not fair on you, because your view is not that this is a bad trainer. Your view is that you've been unlucky in getting to early production models that have problems. I mean, so far, I've not had problems, but the problems are continuing to occur for Tax. This stands the chance of being a really, really great trainer. It's really good looking. I really enjoyed riding it. But we can't ignore these difficulties that they're having, can we? Have you got your latest one yet?
No, it's 5 weeks since I broke my first one after 45 minutes. It's been about 3 weeks since I broke the second one under identical circumstances. And I've been closely monitoring the online discussions about what's going on and the feedback from people. And I can tell you honestly that I've not seen a trainer that's caused this much discussion regarding issues or breakdowns and posts about should it be making this noise? No is the usual answer to that. I called Fluxgate early on, and look, I'm going to stick with that until we officially hear otherwise. When it was working though, it was great. So I'm just waiting for the reliability to be there, and then we can start talking about how good the trainer is.
It's a tricky one. I mean, every time I kind of put the leg over the saddle, if the Flux is underneath the bike, I find myself kind of sniffing the air in anticipation of burning rubber, you know, which is, it's not great really, is it? And I mean, it does sort of follow the pattern of the Neo, not to such an extent with the Neo, but this launch of a really important new product and early production problems. I mean, that is a nightmare for a trainer company. And I, you know, how do they allow themselves to get into that position?
This one's an interesting one, and I think what's bitten them here is the timing. There was the delay, so we saw it at Eurobike. I travelled the other side of the world to see this device and have a look at what's going on, and yeah, the buzz at Eurobike was massive around the Flux. The delay there was through till, was it late November? And then the shipping was delayed again another 2 weeks or so. So they finally got this out. You can tell they were working really, really hard in the background. They got the unit out, but then we had the Christmas holiday period. Which was unfortunate because for two things, people were buying these units and then the support from tax probably wasn't there. I mean, as everyone has the right to go on holiday during that time, we haven't heard a lot. Now, tax do have the pinned post on one of my videos, so they can then update that. And they've been great with updating that information and telling everyone, hey, look, we're sorry about this. We're looking at this and it only affects a small number of units, which is great. So I've given them a communication channel through my channels. But as I was saying before, I've not been involved in another trainer that's caused so many queries or questions or videos to be posted. Yeah, again, my heart sinks on this one. I believed in it. I still will. But round three is going to be even scarier because I'm outside training hard. And those 200 watts for 20 minutes, no, that's nothing now. Or the sprints, we're going to up the watts on the third one. So if Flux round three wants to step in the ring, it's going to be a tougher fight.
that just needs to happen, though. It just needs to happen. We need Clubber Lang. Let's go. Rocky three, throw down.
Yep. And Rumble in the jungle. It's going to be
it just has to happen.
I may even live stream. So people will just be sitting there and grab your popcorn.
Wait, you have a Beam account?
Oh yeah, we'll get it on.
that would be quite an event, actually. Shane versus the Flux round three.
I would love to actually commentate that. That would be awesome.
Actually, Nathan could coach it and tell me what to do and when. I'll be slaughtered, and if the trainer stands up, hey, it'll be a 2-1. Yeah.
Yeah, lactate tolerance reps followed by an all-out sprint, Renshaw style let out, dude. That's my idea right there. We're gonna make this happen. Come on. Let's go, Flux.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'd need to get my ass over to Holland and do live reaction from Tax as Shane goes head to head with the Flux on round three. I'm not sure they'd do that, actually. I can almost smell the fear in Holland from here, actually. We shouldn't make too much of a joke about this because, you know, people are paying real money for this trainer. And, you know, despite the problems, I do think Tax are a good company and they have been offering excellent customer service to people who have had the problems. The thing that just fascinates and kind of appalls me in equal measure is how they've allowed themselves to get into this position. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, that's the tricky one. And yeah, to back up on what you were saying about the customer service, the guys have been fantastic. They really have. So look, hats off there and full credit to Tax for that. And getting it sorted. I think it's a timing issue as well with the holiday period. But yeah, bring on round three. It's going to be tough. And I'm super conscious of the customer experience as well. Everyone needs to trust the units they're getting. And this is where independent reviews are fantastic.
Anyway, listen, it's January, as we know, and for many people, possibly me included, it's time to lose some weight that might have been gained over Christmas. Can Zwift play a part? I mean, you know, is indoor training really any good for losing weight? I caught up with a coach, Kevin Poulton, the mastermind of Matt Heyman's Paris-Roubaix win last season. Kevin continues to work with Matt, who's also a very popular Zwifter. And I think Kevin's also had some input into the workouts on Zwift. So he's clearly a good guy to ask about whether indoor training and Zwifting really can contribute to a weight loss program. Here's what he had to say. Indoor cycling, I mean, can it really help weight loss?
Yeah, absolutely. We all know that to burn a pound of fat, we need to burn 3,500 calories. In a 45-minute session indoors, we can achieve a calorie burn of between 400 and 600 calories. with weight loss indoors, there's a few myths to it. One of those myths is that the goal is to burn fat. But because the time frame is generally very short when training indoors, we need to look at other avenues to burn calories. The goal really is to increase metabolism. And in particular, we're looking to also increase the resting metabolic rate.
So let's keep things nice and simple and basic. What kind of effort level or intensity of riding indoors is ideal?
In terms of weight loss, we're looking to complete very high intensity intervals, very intense work. And the way that this works is that when our heart rate is going to very extreme heights and then recovering, we go into what they call EPOC, which is excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. But what it means really is that there's oxygen debt. The body then ends up using extra oxygen after that session, which then increases metabolic resting rate.
What kind of workouts work really well for those? I'm guessing ones that are interval-based.
Yeah, definitely interval-based. To get this EPOC effect, we really need to have intensity which is above 85% of VO2 max. Now, a lot of us have got power meters on our indoor bikes these days as well, so we can also base it off power. So the kind of efforts that we're going to be doing, they are very extreme. And I guess another point to keep in mind is that it's very mentally taxing and fatiguing as well. So it's not the kind of thing you can do day in and day out. So one of the most effective sessions to burn calories and get this EPOC effect is simply 30-second all-out effort. But the trick with this is it's not a steady-state 30-second effort where the power profile looks like a nice flat plateau. It's the kind of effort where first 10 seconds is the peak power, the middle is probably maintaining it, and the last 10 seconds is a really big drop-off in power, almost to the point where it feels like it's not worthwhile pedaling. But when you're going into that amount of effort, the body responds by flushing itself with massive amount of growth hormones, and that gives us an effect for the next 24 hours. But to do consecutive 30-second efforts, you really need good recovery of between 4 and 5 minutes. So that's just one method of high-intensity training indoors. The other way to do it is to have much shorter efforts of around 6 seconds. Full gas effort, because it's only 6 seconds, the body recovers a lot faster from it, so you can do more of them. So with a 6-second effort, you can look at a recovery of between 1 and 2 minutes.
They're great, simple templates to work to. Kevin, another thing that you see a lot around this time of year is faster riding is a great way to lose weight quickly. Is that right?
No, so faster riding is to make yourself more efficient at utilizing fat for endurance rides and then obviously preserving glycogen stores. In terms of weight loss indoors, the effect isn't going to be there. It's all about burning calories, and the best way to burn calories is with high-intensity efforts. And if you started the session in a fasted state, you're not going to have the energy there to complete high-intensity efforts. So it affects your ability to hit peak power and give your best effort. So that sort of brings us on to the next part, where if you're going to be completing indoor high-intensity efforts, you really need to eat before your ride. So there is that thought about starting exercise in a fasted state. If you're training indoors for 45 minutes to an hour, you definitely want to be fueled up with carbohydrates to allow you to hit your maximal power and maximal efforts.
Excellent. Kevin, I'm very grateful for your time, particularly grateful for your expertise. Thanks very much indeed. Great to talk to you.
Not a problem.
Right on.
So, confession time, boys. Did you put on weight over the festive period? I think maybe a kilo from me, and I'm going to confess, I might regret doing this. I'm going to confess that I have so far not changed my weight on Swift.
Oh, hi. No. Oh.
Have I just said a really bad thing?
Yes.
I have a scale under my bike. I mean, what are you talking about?
There we go. But as for how much weight I put on over Christmas, I haven't actually jumped on the scales yet. So I'm going with the Schrodinger defense that I'm not going to actually know until I observe. So no, I haven't put on any weight at all.
I want to temper my comments as well, my hideous confession I just made by saying I haven't been on the scales. But I don't officially know I put on a kilo.
Yeah, there's no trees falling anywhere ever.
Yeah, exactly right.
Nothing but discipline over here, boys. Oh man. So I haven't been on the scale since I got sick, which was about a week ago though. So I'm not sure because I haven't been able to ride much, but I usually actually lose weight when that happens because my glycogen stores go down and I'm blessed with amazing allergies that keep me from eating most things that you wouldn't want to put in your body as an elite cyclist. So I actually stay a lot away from a lot of things at the holidays. So
as you're sick, Nathan, it makes me realize I've not asked you whether your collarbone is now completely and fully healed and you are back to, your little seasonal sickness aside. You're back to complete fighting fitness, are you?
I guess it takes 18 months for this to go back to, I guess, complete normal in my body, where my body's no longer quote unquote thinking about it or putting any resources toward it. Right now it was two bones. Well, it was one bone originally, then it became two bones, and then it became three bones that are all connected to each other, and it slowly wants to become one again, and it has to reuse resources in the body to do that. So that's the only thing that I think about in the back of my mind sometimes, as far as like how much rest I need to be getting over this next season. Maybe it's going to be a little bit more than usual, making sure that the nutrition and nutrients going in response to training stresses might need a little bit more attention this time around. But otherwise, I'm good to go. I mean, I was putting out really great 5-hour power, I think a couple of weeks back, no problem. And so very, really confident in going into the training season in this next season. It's definitely in the back of my mind just a little bit as far as the collarbone goes, though.
Obviously, you're still streaming. Huge fields we're seeing for racing, aren't we?
Oh, it's absolutely huge. I think it's like 400 to 500 every major race that's going on during the prime times, and I think like 200 to 300 on the nine prime times. It's growing hugely, and I think it's like a quarter to half of the racers sometimes are all new racers. So it's been absolutely amazing. And also a little bit of feedback too, coming through some of the channels, but it's to be expected, and it's all part of the fun. So yeah, it's been growing for sure.
Yeah, well, I think there are some exciting things to be said, but not quite yet about the stuff you do, Nathan. So hopefully we'll be able to talk about that next podcast. But people need to watch this space because there's some exciting stuff coming up. Shane, continue to knock out the videos.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that topic, I've got one coming out very shortly about how to join and how to find your virtual bunch ride. A lot of questions coming through with all the newbies about how to find, they get sort of swamped by, as we've discussed earlier on, they get swamped by a bunch ride. They're like, well, how do I join? And which one do I join? And how do I join? So I did a bit of a how-to with that the other day. So I'll be editing that up tonight and hopefully be out in a few days.
I think that's a really, really good idea. There's so much kind of confused chatter around bunch rides. That sounds like an excellent public service video. That's the end of the first one for 2017. A pleasure as always. Thank you both of you in particular, Nathan, because I know talking when you've got a sore throat and a bad chest is never the easiest of things. So thanks very much for that. Great to hear from you, Shane. Keep out the sun, or keep out of too much sun. Thanks very much indeed, boys.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Simon.
That's it for this episode, podcast fans. All it remains is for me to thank Zwift for their continued and valued support and remind you that the company has no influence on anything we say. Thanks for listening. See you next time.